Hi, this is Drew, and thanks for listening to our podcast. Hopefully you've been enjoying our show for a while now, but if you're a brand new listener, then the next 50 seconds are not for you, so just go ahead and fast forward a bit. I just wanted to ask our longtime listeners to consider becoming patrons of The Drew Marshall Show, because by throwing us just a few bucks each month, you'll be helping what many tell us is the most brutally authentic spiritual show they've ever heard stay on the air. Look, as loyal podcast listeners, you've been getting the same programming our radio listeners have been hearing live Saturdays 1 to 5 for the last 16 years. Except you get to hear everything commercial-free, you smart consumer, you. Well, because of a brand new arrangement with our studio, our expenses have now gone through the roof. And to be brutally honest, we could use the help to cover those costs. So just before you go to bed tonight, maybe you could stop by our website and click on the giant click here to become a patron sign. And if a whole bunch of you were able to scrounge up like $4 per month, then individually your $4 would have just made a massive difference in helping us cover what it costs to bring you the Drew Marshall Show. Okay, that's it. Sorry to bug you. Now on with the show. I hope you have a good sleep tonight after you become a patron.
It's full of charts and facts and figures and instructions for dancing, but I
all right, we're back. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to The Drew Marshall Show. We're streaming live at drewmarshall.ca, and sometimes we're even streaming live on Facebook, although our intern has gone to the restroom.
Sometimes you gotta go.
I think I should complain to the Human Resources Department about that. Interns shouldn't need to do that.
Never.
I've enjoyed today's show, which is rare.
Mostly because I'm the one under the bus this time.
Tim makes the biggest blunder.
Oh, man.
You've had a couple of good doozies over the years,
oh,
eh?
Oh, for sure. But I think,
this one's so bad, we're not even going to repeat it.
I don't even want to think about it.
Listen, it's Love Month here in the Drew Marshall Show, and the secret to love. Anybody know what it is? Well, we're hoping that people who've been married for 50 years know a little bit about it. So during Love Month, I have been interviewing married couples who've been together for 50-plus years, asking them what's their secret. Today's lovebirds, Norm and Sue Allen. They have been married for 50 years, and they join us from their holiday home in Florida. Not the expensive part of Florida, the panhandle area. Yeah. Hello, Norm.
Hello there, Drew.
Hello,
Sue. Sounds like my old friend Tim in the background.
Yeah, baby.
That is Tim in the... We prefer... That's the best place for Tim, is in the background. So.
He's got a face for radio.
Yep, he does too. So, listen, I know it's usually about Norm, so I'm going to go right to Sue on this one to start. Sue...
Hi, Drew.
Yes, hello, darling. You know, many people know your husband. He's kind of a big deal. I think the follow-up question is, how have you done it? Like, you must get asked that a lot, right, Sue?
I do. Yes, I do get asked that a lot. A lot of people call me the saint.
The saint.
Yes.
However, people that know you also know that you've got a bit of a cheeky edge as well, young lady.
So I'm told.
Yeah. So, I mean, if any couple that we've had have been married 50 years, are going to have some stories about some good ding-dong, some fights, some rock'em sock'em robots or something, it's going to be you guys. I mean, Norm, tell me that you screwed up so badly that Sue just blasted you in the face at least once.
She did walk out the door with the luggage and the children.
Oh, but wow.
Didn't.
No, I don't hit.
I leave.
My
she's
mother
more
hits.
Of a passive. She's more passive aggressive.
Yes.
All right. Well, listen. Let's go to the love story. I want to know how you met. Who made the first move? What was the proposal like? The whole thing. Who wants to start off with that?
It's pretty dull, really. It's not really a very exciting story.
It couldn't be any worse than Jack and Shirley Curvin's story of proposal. That was a shocker.
I don't know. Ours is a lot less exciting. We were in this youth group at church together, and I had my eye on him before he knew I was really anybody. And the first encounter we had was over table tennis at a youth retreat, and he beat me, but not by very much.
I'm sorry. What did Norm do?
He beat me playing table tennis. And I found out later he's playing with his left hand and he's right-handed.
Oh, that's nice.
Nicely played, Norman.
And then we had our first date, and we've been together ever since.
We actually returned to the scene of the crime with our kids and grandkids to hear Bruce Coburn at his last concert at Massey Hall, because our first date was at Massey Hall 50-some years ago. But it wasn't Bruce Coburn.
It wasn't... What? What do you mean?
It was the Blackwood Brothers and the Statesmen.
Oh, my goodness.
Gospel quartets.
Yes. Music at its finest.
Oh, you're a smooth guy. You really are. Okay, but, I mean, who made the first move? You know, was there... Can you think that far back, guys, and remember the first kiss or the first hand-holding or the first spooning episode?
I think I helped Susan put her tie her tie for Sky Cadets when we were volunteers at youth group. That was sort of early stages of physical proximity, you know? Help tie your tie.
No, I think I purposely did not get my dad to tie it. I took it to the meeting and I said, can you help me tie my tie? Because, of course, I was a girl. I didn't know how to do a tie.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. All right. Yeah.
That's why Baptists don't tie ties, you know, because it could lead to any number of things.
Yeah, dancing would be one of them. That's right. Yeah,
exactly.
Hey, we're still not good at the dancing.
No. Well, how was the anniversary party? Because that was kind of a big shindig. Did you get Ken Whiteley to come to that?
No. Oh, he's a nice guy.
Oh, it was Bruce Coburn?
No, our kids, our daughter owns the property we formerly had out in the country, and so she and her brother Luke hosted a very nice event under a marquee, pretty low key, finger food and champagne, and we had somewhere around 100 of our friends, and it was a pretty meaningful time. We had one of the great lines was a good friend, Glenn Davis, goes back to our youth group days, and he and his wife Grace were there, and Heidi was doing something from the front of the program, and she said, Mr. and Mrs. Davis, do you remember the wedding? And Glenn yells out, we're not even sure we were there. So anniversary, but anyway, they weren't sure. They couldn't remember being at the wedding.
And we couldn't remember. We looked in the pictures. We couldn't find them either, so neither of us knows if they were there.
You know what? You're the kind of guys I can do this with. I can kind of cut right through it and get to a couple of strong points. Let me ask you this. Are you still in love? Or are you just married because that's the right thing to keep doing?
Some days it is only because it's the right thing, but yes, I'd say we're still in love.
Yeah, and I think we would probably say in love is, you know, when we were young and we were, you know, Baptist fundamentalists, we were more in heat than we were in love, probably, you know. your favorite Bible verse is, it's better to marry than, you know, burn with lust. Or whatever. But I would say we understand love, obviously, a lot different now. And so we love each other profoundly, but there are lots of times when we don't like each other. You know, we've learned over the years because we've, in a sense, been married to several different people, even though it's the same person, as you've changed and grown. Because in 50 years, the role of women in the world has changed substantially. Susan's understanding of herself, my understanding of myself, how we have figured out how to care for each other, has had to be transformed, or we wouldn't be still together and having a few laughs occasionally.
Yeah. Occasionally. When was the darkest time? Was there such a thing as the darkest time? I mean, you kind of joked a little bit about the suitcase and out the door with the kids thing. I mean, if that's true, that must have been the darkest time. Yes.
There were a few dark times, but that's probably the most obvious one.
Yeah.
We were just building our house, and the kids were 2 and 5, and we weren't communicating very well. We were staying at another property, not our own, and I just couldn't take it living in one room anymore, and I wasn't being told what was wrong.
I was an idiot, basically.
Yes.
So one day, I got in the car with the kids in the suitcase, and when Norm called out and said, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going to see my father." And he said, "When are you coming back?" And I said, "I don't know, maybe never." Bye. Got in the car, drove to my father's in Toronto, and he was wise enough to chase me. It was financial issues, really, and we sorted it out over the next couple of days and got back together.
Well, we've had lots of, certainly there have been lots of dark times, some of them not caused by marriage, but we, you know, we've been through lots of stresses and strains as people, and Susan would have times that she would talk about where I'm sure the thought of having to continue the marriage would have been hard to imagine. And you know, there are times when I had those too. And so I would say one of the big things that we came to, there came a point where we came, and I wouldn't be able to tell you how long into the marriage, but it was quite a ways in, when we both were willing to accept that the spirit was at work in the other, and we had to trust that work, that eventually what transformation needed to happen would happen. And so our own individual prayer lives would have done a lot of the processing of things like anger, irritation, and all that sort of stuff. Because our approach to, we would not recommend our model of marriage to anybody because, you know, we do everything wrong, but it somehow works for us.
Man.
Not everything wrong.
No.
Whoa. Don't want to know any more about that. So, okay, first of all, let me just recap a little bit here. You're listening to The Drew Marshall Show, and it's Love Month here on the show, and that means we are interviewing married couples who've been together 50-plus years and asking them, of course, what's their secret. Each of the four couples interviewed this month will have their name drawn from a hat and could win a one-night stay in a fireplace suite with a king-size bed at Madison Manor Boutique Hotel in Tirana. That includes a $25 gift card for the Madison Avenue Pub, which, if they were real Christians, would be given back to the host of the show.
Preach.
Or they might also win a love basket from Gideo.com with handcrafted dark chocolate and massaged love butter. Oh, yeah.
Nothing like massaged love butter on your morning toast.
No.
It is edible, love that's butter. For sure. Okay.
I'll tell you, Drew, at our age, we do need massages, but for completely different reasons.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Okay, so guys, when you hear about marriages that have gone down the toilet and they've been together for 40, 45, 50 years, do you just shake your head or do you completely understand? Like, I've heard from a number of people that say, well, geez, if you've been married that long, why would you pack it in?
I get that, I think. We've been fortunate, I would say, that we've allowed each other a lot of freedom and latitude. But I do know of some marriages where either because they broke up or because one of the couple was widowed, this surviving person ended up with a whole lot of freedom that they didn't have their whole married life. And in a sense, started a new lease on life. But I don't feel like we've ever needed that. Certainly not recently, mm-hmm. because we give each other the freedom to do what we need to do. Plus, I think we learned a long time ago that we don't make unilateral decisions anymore about major things. Unless the other person feels like it's the right thing to do, we just don't move ahead.
Mm-hmm. And I think we work very hard at having friendships that are independent of each of us. We don't particularly trust the my spouse is my best friend thing. I think we need best friends to help us process sometimes good times and bad times within a marriage and within family. And so we both had good, close, personal friends with whom we both are friends as well. But the primary relationship is either my friend or Susan's friend. And that allows a separate and independent processing of things. And we also work very hard that we would have a separate relationship from the children. We knew that they were coming into our life and they were going to go and we were still going to be together. And if we didn't continue to build on our build our relationship and it wasn't just about the children, then we wouldn't have anything left after they left. And that still was a time of heavy negotiation. But, you know, I think we have compassion for people who find it's just time to separate. And we've been in the, you know, we've had lots of conversations with friends along those lines. And sometimes there is an intolerable oppression, or there's a dysfunction that's been masked or hidden. And people just need the freedom to move on. You know, it's painful. And Susan, one time when we were talking with a young couple, we were talking about, you know, fractures in relationship, and essentially said, you know, if one of us would have an affair, and she said, I'm not saying it would just be Norm, we would probably work very hard, even though there'd been a fracture, to put it back together, because we've got so much invested after all these years. Yeah. Now, whether we would have been capable of putting it back together, that's a question we wouldn't know until we faced it.
Yeah. You know, but
I think we've learned not to be as judgmental as we were, at least I have when I was younger. I used to just condemn people for not doing the right thing. But now that I've gone through a few of my own problems and crises, I realize that there's always a lot more to it. And until you've walked in that person's shoes, you can't say you would do it or you wouldn't do it.
It's amazing how many Christians think gays are going to hell until their kid becomes one.
Exactly. Yes.
Just thought I'd throw that out.
Well, I mean, I did an annual trip. We called the Holy Land Tour down to North Carolina, and we took 16 golfers down every year.
Speaking of hell.
And we had 1 year where there were four of the guys had adult children who had recently declared or identified an alternative lifestyle. And they were all grappling with it in very different ways, but it certainly changed the tone of a conversation that one would have if it was just theoretical.
Yep. Yeah, like back in the old locker room at Teen Ranch back in the early days. Jeez. I think about how many, you know, Tim and I were both around there, and I think about just our, well, we were just insensitive jerks. I mean, more than we are now. And
gotten better or worse?
No, I don't know either. Yeah. Anyway, I'm going to back out of that. Let's go to this point. You talked earlier about the problem with couples investing everything into the kids, and then the kids leave, and the couples are left staring at each other with this awkward silence. And especially within the Jesus world, there seems to be a fair bit of hyper-focusing on the kids. You got to make sure you read all the Dobson books and invest every ounce you have in the children. It's got to be the children. It's all about the children. It's the children. It's the children. And then all of a sudden, you know, the children's go. And the children's go. Where am I from?
You're working on that golf course in North Carolina.
Letting the children of Israel out of Egypt?
Let my children go.
That's like an old Ken Whiteley gospel. Anyway, so what do you say to those out there that will convince them that they got to be a little more careful to keep investing in the spouse and not just the kids? Like, how do you wake the holy rollers up from that equation?
Well, my line that I used on our kids when they were little, and I think it still applies, and Norm alluded to it earlier, when the odd time we would get away for a week or a weekend alone and we had a grandparent or somebody in for the kids and they would moan and groan that they didn't want us to leave. They must have been pretty young then. I would say.
Later when they were doing field parties and stuff, they didn't give a crap.
But I would say, look at, you know, we were together before you came along. We had a life before you. And I hope that when you grow up, leave us, we're still going to be together, and we will still have a life without you, much as I love you.
Yeah.
So that's why we're going, because we need to spend time alone together without you. And if I don't think that hurt their feelings, but if it did, it didn't matter.
I think there is a and I don't know whether it's restricted to the faith community, but there is a sort of a almost like a mechanization of child rearing going on in from my aging observation. And people seem to have this idea that they can engineer an outcome for their children. Now, the world is very different than when our kids were growing up. I understand that. But I think that there is a side to which we have to do what we can to expose the kids to what we believe, particularly through friendships and people who are in our home. Less so, in a sense, the institutional expressions of the faith. I think our kids would say that they learned more from the people who were in our home, and they valued the institutional expressions that they were part of. Some of it was damaging, some of it was good. But, at core, where they learn the faith and where they learn a lot is in the home and not by overt teaching. I've never been one to, I tried a couple of times to do, family altar and whatever you want to call it. And everybody would just look at me because I'd get mad because they wouldn't pay attention. And, it was all ridiculous. And so, my whole belief, and Susan and I share it, was that, you learn the faith through the incarnational presence of Christ in you and in the home. And, people will then have their own freedom as adults to go their own way. Our kids are very different in how they think about faith now. They're very respectful of the roots from which they came, but they have their own ideas and their own direction, which they should have. And yet they would, they would clearly say, my son at one point said to me, he said, when I look back on my church and camp and all these different things, all of them were wounding experiences. But I respect the people of faith because I've met the real ones when they've been in our home and in our extended relationships.
Wow.
And so for me, there's a, you got to trust the move of the Spirit in relationships and be less reliant on propositional stuff that will then produce the right outcome. Because believing that if, we've got a good relationship with our kids, and we've got lots of friends who are in grievously difficult situations, but I wouldn't for the life of me say we did certain things better mm-hmm. or they did certain things worse. Stuff happens, and, you just have to, and then you cope. But, there are no guarantees, and you just have to, be in relationship with the children as they grow and change and develop.
Let me ask you this, because you're both God people, you're both Jesus people, you've been part of the Jesus tribe for many, many years, and I've heard people say, if God was not a part of our lives, there's no way we would have been married this long, all the credit goes to God, blah, blah, blah. Is that the case with you guys? Do you think if you guys weren't Jesus people, you would have killed each other?
I wouldn't go that far. I would say, and I always do say, it's hard work and the grace of God. I wouldn't like to put a percentage on either, but there certainly were times when I think we stayed together because it was the right thing to do in the eyes of God and our family, our faith family and our own family. I certainly know that there were times when I thought, it would be easier not to be together, but I also did make those vows, and I did take them seriously, as I guess everybody does. But, even an example, how people go and do their marriage vows renewal at 20 years or 25 or 50 or whatever. And I've never cared that much about doing that. But anytime the subject has come up, Norm's always said, "Nope, I meant it the first time. I don't need to say it again."
It's nice. Interesting.
Well, I agree 100% with what Susan's saying.
Smart move.
See, the guy driving by the farmer's field and sees the farmer leaning against this absolutely gorgeously rich crop that's willowing in the wind, and he pulls up and stands and talks to the guy and says, "Isn't it a wonderful thing what God can do with a field?" And the old farmer looks at him and says, "Well, you should have seen it when he had it all by himself." Trying to figure out what is weeding and what is sowing and reaping that you're responsible for yourself. There is some combination. I would say the other piece put it slightly differently, is that our individual relationship and our collective relationship with Jesus causes us to be drawn out of self-focus when we're listening.
Oh, say that again. That was like an Oprah moment.
That was a thought of the week.
But basically, if we really do have a conversation, an ongoing conversation with the God who loves us, and my conversations tend to be with Jesus, he's not reinforcing when I'm angry or when I'm, feeling I've been slighted. His call to me is grow up, forgive, and move, do what you have to do to repair. So that external call to forgiveness, reconciliation, to love of a deeper kind is actually a profound thing. If it's just, God's doing something, that's one thing. But I think God actually has conversations with us where he says, suck it up, buttercup, and move on, And so our approach to faith is fairly individualistic. We don't pray together, but we both pray.
Oh, hold on, Norm. The couples that pray together stay together.
Yeah, well, we're the exception to that rule. It doesn't work for us.
Oh, man. Advice, yeah. Right? That's where let's just sum this baby up. You got couples out there that are, they're part of the God tribe, and they kind of hunkered down with this thought, I'd never consider divorce. That would be, but murder, I might consider that. Like, what do you say to the people that are either naive or really sitting there in a hurting relationship and they want to pack it in? Like, at what point can you make that decision? How do you make the decision? How do you make the decision to move forward? How do you make the decision to put a bullet in it? Guys, we need some answers. Sue.
I would never tell people on my own say-so to do anything. I would tell them if they're at that point, they need professional help. So go talk to somebody who knows how to guide you through the thinking process.
Yeah.
But if you're just generally speaking annoyed, then I think one of the things that we've noticed missing in the past, and we've usually tried to do something about it, is just go have fun together and stop talking about all the problems.
I find that one of those axe throwing places are fun to do as a couple.
So they say.
Norm, how about you, buddy? Final words of advice for those who are hurting or naive.
Well, I guess it depends on what kind of circle of relationships they have. Sometimes it is time to put a bullet in a relationship. But I think that it's been harder for some of the younger crowd that I'm listening to who are getting married in their 30s, and they already have defined careers, incomes, identities. And so blending together is a much harder thing than it would have been for us when we were just 21 and didn't know something from Shinola. But it would be interesting.
I don't even know what Shinola is.
Yes, Norm?
But anyway, I would say if you're in the building of your relationship, surround yourself with friends independent of one another who will not reinforce the negative but will encourage you towards love and forgiveness. If you are really in serious trouble, then reach out to good friends who you can trust and then try to find the professional help you need. Because things often, I've seen, we had good friends who, their story would be our marriage ended up in ashes and we rebuilt it. Now, it was hard, hard, hard work, and they had with each other destroyed it. But, the possibilities are there. But we haven't got in our culture that suffering, endurance, perseverance, some of those old-fashioned words are still part of what life's about. We think that if things go sideways, somebody should fix it rather than we should figure out a way to handle pain in a more constructive way. So I would encourage people to do what they can, but I'm not a big believer in, just keep going into something that's totally self-destructive. Mm-hmm. But, yeah.
Well, listen, we just got a message from someone that said, wow, this couple really has their fecal matter together.
That's the word I was looking for with Shinola.
That's one of the things we disagree on, Drew. I don't talk like that.
No, yeah, I can understand it. Well, listen, guys, thank you very, very much. I knew this was going to be gold. It was radio gold. And I look forward to seeing your faces when you get back from the United States of America, if we haven't built our wall already by then. And I'll let you know which one of these things you won, whether you won the one-night stay in a fireplace suite with a king-size bed at the Madison Manor Boutique Hotel in Toronto, and then you can give me the $25 gift card for the Madison Avenue Pub, or if you won the Love Basket from Giddy-O with handcrafted dark chocolate and massage love butter, giddyo.com. One of those will be good for you guys.
Cool.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
See you, Tim Miller.
Bye-bye, Gnormanso.
Okay. Bye.
Just ignore it. Ignore the man behind the curtain, please. Thank you.
See
you guys. Bye-bye. Bye. That was good stuff. I've enjoyed this segment that we've done. 50 years. They got to know something.
I would hope so. Or they've just ignored it for long enough.